It's the Earth Day celebration at the DGDG Mazda stores. Capital Mazda, Stevens Creek Mazda, Concord Mazda, and Team Mazda. Hey, it's Sean Del Gran. And this April, we've got outstanding offers on brand new Mazdas. Plus, we've partnered with One Tree Planted to help reforest areas of Northern California. We pledge to plant one tree for every vehicle we sell. Don't miss the Earth Day celebration at the DGDG Mazda stores in San Jose, Concord, and Vallejo.
We're getting you ready for the game on The Buildup with news from around the league, interviews, highlights, and more. Here's your host, Ted Ramey.
Good afternoon, everyone. We are getting ready for Sharks Hockey. Our live pregame coverage begins at 3:30 today before the Sharks do take on the Carolina Hurricanes at 4 o'clock right here on the Sharks Audio Network. A lot going on with the Sharks. Trade speculation. To get into all of it, we are now joined by Curtis Pichelka, who covers the Sharks for Bay Area News Group. Curtis, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Ted. How are you?
I'm doing very well, and we are entering what I've maybe used this line on you before, but what I feel is the start of one of the more interesting moments in the history of the Sharks as a franchise, because I think that what Mike Grier is in the process of doing, along with the rest of the front office as it pertains to hockey operations, is making decisions that are going to have, you know, long-term impacts. And we saw what I assume is the first of what will be several moves being made now and this offseason. So what was your reaction to that first trade that we saw come in involving Nieto and Merkley?
Well, I was maybe just a tad surprised at the deal, just because I thought maybe Matt Nieto might get traded a little bit closer to the deadline, mm-hmm. and that the Sharks might try to maybe acquire a pick for him, a draft pick for him for this upcoming year or this upcoming draft this year. So in that respect, I was a little surprised. You know, you delve a little deeper and you see a Colorado really doesn't have that many picks to begin with for this upcoming year. They've got a first, a fifth, and a sixth, and a seventh. So they've already traded away their second, third, and fourth picks for this upcoming year. So anyway, I think, you know, when you look at the deal, it's, you know, Ryan Merkley for Martin Cott. Understand what the process was, what the thought process was for that deal. You know, two players you could probably use, a change of scenery. You know, obviously Ryan Merkley had requested a trade and was looking for another opportunity elsewhere. And I think Martin Cott was kind of reaching that point too after he's put on waivers earlier this month. So you can understand from that standpoint. You know, like I said, I think Matt Nieto is, you know, not necessarily a guy who's going to put a point a night or that kind of player, but he served a very valuable role for this Sharks team in terms of his penalty killing, in terms of his reliability as far as a middle six forward. Mm-hmm. You know, he was well liked in that locker room. How he helps add to the culture in that aspect. You know, Jacob McDonald's still a little bit of a question mark as far as whether or not he could be a full-time NHL player. You know, the Sharks, you know, we'll see what happens when Radim Simic is able to come back again. I tend to think that sometime after this long break here, he'll be much closer to be able to play again in that instance. Then what happens is to McDonald's, does he just go back to being kind of a seventh defenseman? Does he get sent back to the American League? Kind of have to wait and see. So it's one that's kind of good. You'll have to kind of see how it all plays out before you really get a judgment on it or a little handle on it. You'll see what happens with Martin. I think that's part of the key to this deal. How does Martin kind of pan out? Mm-hmm. You know, is he a guy that you know, with a change of scenery, with that he can sort of unlock what made him sort of a first round pick, 5 years ago? Can he get back to that type of form, sort of that kind of flash that he had back then? And can the Sharks bring it out of him? And if so, then, you know, you look at a pretty nice return on for a quality player, like Ryan Merkley and Matt Nieto. If not, then, well, then, you know, it's one of those things that you kind of have to, kind of live with, I guess, if those kind of deals. But maybe it's the chance that, you know, Mike Greer and his team was worth taking at this point.
Yeah, and it will be interesting to see how they do use McDonald, because obviously they've got Knyazhov coming back as well. He's been doing his conditioning and rehab stuff with the Barracuda, but obviously the injuries to Šimek, Čičak being not quite there yet. It is interesting to see where this goes. And then Quinn also talked about the potential of McDonald being on the power play.
Yeah. You could certainly slide in on that second power play unit at the very least. That's probably makes a lot of sense for him to do that too. Cause really, I mean, you've had, you know, a guy like Mario Ferraro in that position and Matt Benning in those position, that position before. And then those, you know, those guys didn't play poorly there at all, especially Benning. I thought he did a nice job back there, but you know, if you got in a little bit more, slightly more offensively minded defenseman, in McDonald in that role, that's going to certainly help, even if it's maybe just for a minute or two per game in a second unit sort of role. That would be beneficial for him and sort of add to his value to what he can bring to this team.
Quinn talked about Noah Gregor getting more time on the penalty kill. And that's actually something that I like, because when we've seen Gregor in limited capacity before, I felt like he did work hard on the penalty kill. And I think that also opens up more opportunity for him. I wanted to get your reaction to that. And also, one of the things that I do wonder about with Gregor, Curtis, is the fact that he's so fast and he's so exciting and, you know, the classic wing type player, but I feel like all of his goals come in the dirty spaces. He poaches below the hash marks. There's almost a little bit of Joe Pavelski about him. Is his game maybe misclassified because of his speed?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I mean, once you get to the national, one of the leading scorers, you know, for his junior team in the WHL. And he was a very, you know, productive player at the American League level as well. But once you get to the National League, it's a situation where there's only so many players that get those top minutes. And, you know, sometimes players have to figure out a different role for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whether it's more of a grind type role. And obviously, Noah still has to use his speed whenever possible. But you're right, you know, getting in some of those dirty areas, being a guy who can get in on the forecheck and be a little bit more physical, a guy. And if a situation where maybe he flourishes in this sort of penalty kill type role, mm-hmm. and that allows him to sort of stay in the league for a long time, that's a benefit for him. And so I think when David Quinn mentioned this morning that this is a real opportunity for Noah, you know, to maybe round out his game a little bit, I think that's something that could really work out in his favor if he's able to do that sort of thing. You know, Matt Nieto was, you know, he was a big time scorer in college, but you know, in the NHL, he was kind of the same type of player in some respects. He was a very fast player, but just maybe had trouble finishing and that kind of thing. I remember when he spent some time on Joe Thornton's wing, you know, for a couple of years there in the Todd McClellan era. And, you know, while he was certainly an energetic player, he was never a guy who could, you know, really fill the net kind of thing, yeah. Especially because if you're playing with Joe Thornton, you're expected to produce offense. So, you know, maybe this is a way for Noah to sort of evolve in his pro career, is to take on sort of, and just realize that, you know, there's a certain way to stay in this league, and maybe this is the type of player he has to become.
Another guy who used to play on the wing of Joe Thornton was Kevin LeBanc, who had his best year in 2018-2019 when the Sharks made that deep run to the Western Conference Final. Yet he's a guy who has not been able to quite recapture that form. But I felt that this year, until he was sat down for a few games after he had that big defensive error, as I try to talk here. Before that, I felt like he'd been playing some pretty good hockey and he'd been more aggressive. And, you know, part of that aggressiveness, I feel, is he takes some bad penalties. So you take the good with the bad. Were you surprised by how long Kevin got sat down?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was, you know, they sat him down after that Edmonton game. He sat down for the Jersey game. The Sharks played pretty well in that game overall, except for the fact that, you know, for those last few minutes there, they gave up a 6-on-5 goal, and then, you know, lose in a shootout. And then, But then they come back and they beat Dallas and in the next game, and Kevin's still out. And so, okay, well, maybe it makes, maybe Quinn doesn't want to tinker with the lineup too much and just wants to, you know, sit him out. But what surprised me is after that Columbus loss, that Kevin still stayed out after that game. I was kind of, you know, I was kind of confused by that a little bit, because really, I mean, there was a lot of players in that game who just didn't really bring much in terms of energy, and maybe you get some on a back to back, maybe you get some fresh legs in there. You know, it didn't pan out, of course, that's not the way it happened. And then finally, you know, he got in the game most recently on Tuesday there. So, you know, it was, you know, it was a little bit of a surprise to see him sit out that long. I think maybe you know, Kevin was, you know, he didn't agree necessarily with the reasons why he got sat out, but he just said, hey, what's done is done. Like, all I can do now is kind of control what I control going forward. And so he had a good attitude about it. At least after the shock wore off, he kind of just said, okay, let's try to figure out what I need to do and to stay in the lineup now. And, you know, I mean, he's a player that, you know, he still has one more year left on his contract. David Quinn's not going anywhere. He just, you know, so can Kevin consistently find a way to do what David Quinn wants him to do and stay in the lineup, you know, for the rest of the season here? I think that could go a long way into determining whether or not whether Kevin's going to be long for the organization, is whether or not he can, you know, get on the same page with Quinn here over these last two, 3 months of the season and really find out for himself and find out what will make him, you know, what will keep him in the lineup and be a productive player like he has been at times throughout his career.
It was interesting, though, because Bob Bugner did something similar with him, but it was usually just for one game and then it would be back. I mean, does that work? I mean, that's the thing, is like LeBanc has proven himself as a guy who can net almost 60 points in a season, granted playing alongside Joe Thornton. But this year, it seemed like it was in that vein again. He was trending in that direction. Is it too late in his career for the message to be delivered that way?
You know, I'm not, I don't know. I think under a new coach, maybe it has to be sort of reinforced. I know, you know, as you know, you're right. He's 27 years old now. He's his sixth year in the NHL. There does come a point where if it doesn't happen by now, maybe it won't happen. But, you know, I think Kevin is, you know, sort of trying to be professional about it. He wants to make sure he's in the lineup and contributing. So where does this all lead to? I don't know. You know, like I said, we'll see what happens in for the rest of the season here and in the summertime, if there's a change of scenery for him. But, you know, right now, I think David just wants to do what he can to continue to get the best out of him and see if he is a fit here for the long term.
March 3rd is about a month and a week away. Do you have any expectations of what might happen by then? Or are you just thinking whatever happens here will happen in terms of the trade deadline?
Well, I mean, it would be very surprising to see the Sharks hang on to certain players or pending UFAs like Nick Bonino and James Reimer. To me, it does not make sense for the Sharks to keep those type of players, even though they're great in the room and they're terrific veteran leaders. You know, the Sharks are at a stage where they really need to acquire some picks and some young assets if they're not going to get draft picks. So to me, it's, you got to try to get something while you can, because, you know, I mean, those, as much as they like playing in San Jose, I mean, they can just walk easily as you unrestricted free agents in the offseason, and you get nothing for them. So I think, and you know, Nick Bonino's got a little bit of trade protection too, but I don't think it's anything that's too crazy as far as limiting what Mike Greer can do in terms of a trade. So I would certainly expect those two players to get dealt before March 3rd. Obviously, there's been a ton of speculation regarding Timo Meier and his long-term future here. You know, I think Mike Greer and I'm not sure if anything is official has happened by now, but I think, you know, there's been reports that he'll allow other teams to talk to Timo Meier's agent about a potential of a long-term contract extension with that team, which would certainly help in terms of the amount of what the type of return the Sharks would get in a trade. So teams would, you know, if instead of just being a situation where he plays out this year and has a 1 year contract for next year for $10 million, the other team would, you know, have some security knowing that the player is not just a rental in that respect. And, you know, that would potentially help the Sharks get a good return that could help them, you know, not only the long term, maybe in the short term as well, as getting NHL ready type players. So that's going to be a major storyline here over the next 5 weeks to see what happens with him. And then obviously there's a lot of speculation too with Erik Karlsson. I don't know if that's necessarily going to happen by March 3rd. That might be a situation where, you know, opposing GMs might wait to the offseason to maybe inquire and revisit that type of deal, just because we don't quite know for sure what the salary cap's going to be for next year. And we're taking on a player who makes as much money as Erik Karlsson does. That's always going to be a consideration, and whether or not Erik wants to move on himself like Brent Burns did last season. So a lot of, I think the Sharks will be very, very busy and a real team to watch here over the next 5 weeks.
With Timo Meier in particular, do you think there's any part of him that would want to stay? And the fact that he's only 26, he's not going to be 27 till the start of next year, that gives you a better idea of where the Sharks timeline really is at. I mean, I know that we can talk about how guys change after they're 30, but, you know, he's still very, you know, he's young, relatively speaking. I just, you know, as you get closer to 30, you don't know what's going to happen. But then again, we look at Joe Pavelski, for instance, and we look at Logan Couture. I think Logan Couture in a different situation would be probably even more productive than he is now. Like, how much of that concern with age does come in when we're talking about the timeline for when the Sharks expect to be competitive, aka contenders again?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good point, because obviously when they extended Tomas Hertl last year, you look at, you know, he's a couple of years older than Timo, and we'll be, you know, much later in his, by the time that deal ends, we'll be a much older player in terms of when a potential extension and how Timo Meier would be when that contract ends. So you do get more of those prime years if you were to extend Timo Meier long term. You know, at the same time, I think, you know, maybe Mike Greer looks at it from a situation that says, you know what, this core of players that we've had, these four, five, six players that we've had together over the last 3.5 years just hasn't really gotten the job done. And then maybe it's time to turn the page a little bit and get some new blood. I mean, when we talked to Mike Greer earlier this month about around the halfway point, he kind of indicated, it's like, you know, we've got some really good younger prospects that aren't quite ready for full-time NHL roles yet. And we've got this group of older players, or, you know, players in their late 20s, early 30s, that, you know, are certainly very good players. What they lack is sort of that middle ground, those players in their early to mid 20s who are really pushing to become, you know, full-time NHLers and be impactful, you know, NHL players. I mean, those top six type fours, those top four type defensemen. That's what this organization really wants or lacks and feels is, you know, Mike Greer feels that's a real need to do that. So as much as you like to keep a 35, 40 goal score in Timo Meier, you know, you really sort of want to also add some players who are going to be a little bit younger and maybe in time just being as impactful and maybe not cost as much either. And let's be honest, an extension for Timo Meier is going to run you about $9.5 million from everything I'm hearing. So that's something to consider as well, is that, you know, the cap and how you're allocating your resources right now as you try to grow this team for the long term. And, you know, my career too told us too, it's like, you know, when I asked him this, you know, do you see this as a playoff team for next year? And he says, you can't rule it out, but it's just, there's a lot of points to make up to do that. You know, I mean, there's a lot of ground to make up if you want to be a playoff team next year. And so, you know, that's something to consider as well. So a lot of things on Mike Greer's plate. I just think Mike Greer, from everything I've gathered, he wants to start to mold this team in his image. And you know, Timo Meier is his most tradable asset, the most you can get in return. So I tend to think that's how it's going to play out.
Again, that was Curtis Peschelka of Bay Area News Group. There is more of that interview, which you will be able to hear tomorrow morning on Morning Tide, presented by Coors Light. We are just about out of time, and remember to join us for live pregame coverage at 3:30 this afternoon. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
This podcast can be found for download under Sharks Hockey Digest on iTunes, Google, and Spotify, and on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app, presented by Western Digital. All music by Yogi Yend.